Lord, how would you like to start out by telling me what university was like when you were there?
That goes way back. This is the centennial, the 50th anniversary, and what it was like. I like to think of the university in those days because of the contact that you had, close contact with all the professors with whom you who were teaching you. It was a sort of a family group rather than the 16 or 18,000 that they have today. It's quite a difference. I think it was a great privilege to be a freshman from 1915 in that university. Because the way the university has built up since, and I think that the spirit which was engendered by the pioneering students of those days, combined with the group that came back from the war and so on, and has built up a university which is pretty hard to equal in spirit any place on this continent at any rate.
Do you think that in those days the faculty and students could envision quite such a large university as it would have been, as it would become?
Oh yes, I think so. I think that was bound to come. Anybody who had any idea of the future of British Columbia, especially the Lower Mainland, would realize that there would be a tremendous university here at one time. I have in mind the University of Washington next door. I remember we went down there once to see the opening of the stadium. And at that time, they had 6,000 students, I think. That was around 1920, 21. Mostly by streetcar. There's hardly any automobiles. To think of taking your own car to the university in those days was just anyone who did it was, except the members of the faculty, was thought of sort of as a millionaire or an eccentric. Most of them came by either walked. I for myself, I only lived a block and a half away. So there's no problem as far as I was concerned. I can't imagine myself thinking of using a car anyhow. Maybe we could all use streetcars in those days.
I forgot to mention. Did you try to ask a question? Oh, it doesn't matter. When I asked you a question, I forgot to mention it. That's why I said, how did you get there? You would say, I got to university by, since I'm going to be completely out of here.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm.
What is your most outstanding memory of UBC in those days? You were a freshman in the first freshman class.
Well, one of the events which you come back to your mind, you know, having in mind the type of student we had and the spirit of the university was just after I came back from the war. I finished my freshman year in 1915-16 and then went overseas and was away for 2 years. When we came back, then the student body began to grow. First year, there were less than 400 students, but it began to grow after the war. And the one occasion that I remember especially was when the COTC was reformed at the university. They were on parade just below the arts building at that time, and later on became the TB wing of the Vancouver General Hospital. One of the students, Jack Weld, had a fire hose up on the roof of that building, and he turned it on the parade below. He was caught and he was tried by a court of the students. He was fined $10, found guilty and fined $10, and The rest of the students had a tag day, though, to pay his fine for him. That's the sort of thing that stands out sometimes in your memory, and that sort of thing.
Can you remember any of the professors?
Oh, yes, I remember. That's one thing that I remember a great many of the professors. And they are personal friends, like Freddie Wood. Billy McDonald, Freddie Wood, whose name is under the Freddie Wood Theater and starts the drama. Billy McDonald, who really, Dr. Professor W.L. McDonald, who was interested in getting the musical society started. And Soward, Sage, oh golly, the names just run all the way through. And with so many of them are still my personal friends. You don't see that sort of thing now.
No, you don't.
Because of the tremendous number of students.
Was there any sports activity in those days or any sort of
activity? Oh, great. Sports was one of the principal activities so far as student affairs are concerned. The university built up its rugby teams and its basketball. They played soccer, tennis. Well, all the sports were represented. And I was on a committee that with Harry Letson, who I forget who the lady was. There was a lady member who designed the BC letters for what to call the block letters, the small block and the big block letters. And those letters are still the same design that we fixed up in those days.
Any clubs?
Yes, there are lots of clubs, and like the Musical Society, the Economics Club, the Literary Society, and so on. There are lots of clubs. And we had the usual business about whether fraternities and sororities should be allowed or not. I think I was president of the Alma Mater Society at one time, and I was a member of a fraternity. And we had a meeting of the Alma Mater Society to consider the matter. We had more than one meeting. And, the debate was quite fast and furious. However, fraternities, as we all know, were allowed and are still continuing.
Can you think of any other amusing incidents?
Another incident where I just mentioned Freddie Wood's name a short time ago. I remember one of the first meetings that we had of the Alma Mater Society, the President Westbrook was to speak to the Alma Mater Society, and I was deputized to see that there were no stragglers outside in the corridors and to get them in to the meeting. And I saw a young fellow looking around, not quite knowing, it seemed to me, where he should be or what was the next step, and I went over and grabbed him by the arm, and I said, "The meeting's just about to begin. Get in there." So he went meekly in, and I found after it was Professor Freddie Wood.
Oh, they must have been really young in those days. Mm-hmm. Somewhere
soured, I think. Yes, that's quite understandable.
Can you think of any special characteristic
that UBC had that, if you notice it when you went to Oxford Hall, other universities wouldn't have? Well, if one were to try and name a special characteristic of the university in those days, I would say it was the spirit of the students. And I think that's been exemplified and carried through in more recent years as well. We were not able to get enough money from the government to build such a thing as a gymnasium. We built our own gymnasium. We built our own playing field. And we built the most of our student monies in the Brock building. The Armory building was paid for by the deduction of the pay that went to the members of the COTC, all their money that they were supposed to receive personally. They said, here, you take this money and build the Armory. I think there's some $40,000 raised that way. That, I think, is the spirit which I have heard commented on so often by visitors who come here, even today, and when it's pointed out what the students have actually built out there themselves out of their own pockets, they can't think of any parallel in any other university. So.
You've been connected with university for so many years, though, Mr. Justice Lord. Have you noticed, what evolution have you noticed over the years? In how did it go, crisis after crisis, or smoothly? Or?
Well, of course, as the speaking of the earlier days, and as the university progressed, we had one very, very hard time during the Depression years when the government grant had to be cut down and down and down until I was on the Senate at that time, and I remember the terrific times that we had wondering whether we were going to keep on going or not. And I think that although there was a lot of fighting between the faculties, especially those who felt that agriculture was getting too much of the grant from the government, that bitterness, I think, is all gone many, many years ago. And all the faculties now, and we've been building up more and more and more, getting the professional faculties and the international studies and all that sort of thing, and our own graduate studies. The university, I think, has come to the time when it might say we are now full-fledged. Dentistry is just getting started now, and there may be some other faculties that might be established, but I think we've built on very solid foundations, and right from the beginning, being carried forward at the present time. But we're trying to keep away from frills. We want solid education, and I think that is the attitude of Senate over the years, and will continue to be.
How did you overcome this depression crisis when you were afraid it might have to close down?
Cutting salaries, cutting out the buildings that had been authorized, and postponing their construction, postponing this, postponing that, and crowding the students into the places where we probably had twice as many students in one classroom as we should have, and that sort of thing. That, of course, is after my time at the university from the point of view of a student. I'm speaking now from the point of view of one of those who was on the Senate. And we didn't have those troublous times when I was on the board of governors.
When were you on the board of governors?
1940 to 1952, I think it was.
And that was a period of threat.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And that was during the war, during the war years. I started my term on the Board of Governors, taking the place vacated by late Sherwood Lett, who was on the board, and he left to go overseas again. I took his place on the board, and I was there for the next 12 years, with periods of probably a couple of months in there.
Well, how did the university handle the students going to war? Did they allow them all, was there in the Second War a complete exodus practically, or not? Would they keep enough?
No, they kept certain, so far as students going to war was concerned, of course the university encouraged it as much as they could and should. And there were those who were engaged in scientific research, and who were in subjects which the university knew would eventually be necessary for the building up of Canada after the war. That, I think, was a policy which was recognized throughout Canada. I think the United States adopted a different attitude in that respect. They, all students, if their time came for the draft, they were for it. Didn't matter whether they might be of some assistance in the scientific build up or not. I think our universities followed that. I think a lot of boys are disappointed because they were persuaded to stay rather than go overseas.
What do you think that UBC has contributed to British Columbia and the world?
Well, when you think of British Columbia's contribution to the growth of British Columbia, it's it opens up a very, very wide aspect. I don't see how one can very well. Well, it would take a bit of research to try and pinpoint just where the university has had its effect on the, well, for instance, the economy. The students who have graduated from this province, there's from this university, it's surprising when you hear of the talk of the exodus of students to the United States and so on. Far the greatest percentage of students who have graduated from here have remained in Canada and in British Columbia, and their effect on all aspects of British Columbia life is hard to estimate, but I know it's great.
Can you foresee anything for UBC, how it will go, the trend it will take in the next 50 years?
When you speak of the future of British Columbia University, of our UBC, I hope that it doesn't get very much larger than it is at the present time. The new universities which are being established are filling a great need that is necessary for the, shall I say, at the present time at any rate, the arts, the scientific subjects, the applied science, the law, medicine, that sort of thing, all of which are tremendously expensive faculties, could well be left to UBC for, I should think, a good many years in the future. That, I suppose, there'll have to be a division sometime as UBC, as the province grows, but at the present time, I should think that UBC, having built up those faculties and being expensive faculties, that UBC should be left to carry those out, because they have the very good teaching staffs for all of those faculties, and they should be allowed to continue with them in that way. It's a tremendous thing to build up a staff for a faculty of medicine, for instance.
Palmer, do you want to turn that off just for a second? Can you turn it off a second?
See the green stockings and sweet lavender. see my memories going. What is that? So Dora Adams was in both of those, and she was with the Maroney Olsen Players for several years after that, touring the United States and Canada. But in the last several years, she has been teaching in UCLA drama. I wouldn't say that there's anyone who's made a particularly high name in drama. Well, of course, in the field of international affairs, UBC graduates are outstanding, like Norman Robertson, who has just retired, and Hugh Keenly's side has had a big name, and I can give a few moments, I could think of lots of others, but there are a tremendous number of them. UBC men seem to have done very, very well indeed in the field of external affairs.
Can you remember any friendly rivalries between the faculties or amongst the faculties when you went there?
No, I can't think of any.
Was there any feeling of, we're the science men, you're the arts men, like there was?
No, not with the faculty. That was with the students.
No, I meant amongst the students.
Oh, yes.
The faculty.
Oh, yes, they used to have their fights the science men, of course, that's traditional with them. I think it came up from McGill, from the parent of University of BC. Science men are supposed to be tough and weren't going to stand for any nonsense from any art students, especially. And they used to have their fights out on snowball fights, which would go into sort of a semi-riot before they were finished out on King Edward High School grounds.
You were always at the Fairview Shacks, were you?
Yes.
Did you find them overcrowded and as bad as everybody's?
Well, they were overcrowded even when I left there in 2021. And they didn't, it was 1925, I think, wasn't it, that they moved out to Point Grey? So how they carried on from then on, hard to imagine. It must have been very, very uncomfortable indeed. But we went out to see the destruction of the old auditorium a few years ago. Harry Logan will remember that. Had a sort of a special service out there to say goodbye to the old auditorium before they put the wrecking hammers on it and tore it down to build new hospital buildings. But it was quite an auditorium.
How?
Hmm?
How? In what way?
It was fully wooden. The stage was quite small. And the classrooms, these are what we called X, Y, and Z, that classrooms. Sometimes somebody would get in the auditorium when the lectures were going on in the adjoining X and Y, and made life miserable for the professors who were trying to teach in the meantime in those classrooms next door. But by the time the professors got in there, the noise had ceased. They only seemed to have a watch out. That made it a little more difficult for the professors. That is always, will seem to be, I suppose, one of the attributes of youth, to try and disturb others.